Welcome to Bookworms. This is the show where we review books, and today is a bonus episode. And today I have with me our favorite guest host, Becky.
You sound really weird.
Your point?
Like your voice.
How does it sound?
I don't know. Uppy. Like
in
you're
a
using.
Bad way?
Yeah, like you're using upspeak.
I'm sorry. Just trying to speak loud enough to be heard in the microphone. So.
You want to try your intro again? Like legit, like I wasn't trying to start something there.
Welcome to Bookworms. This is our second attempt because Becky didn't like the first one.
He sounded funny.
And this is a bonus episode with our favorite guest host, Becky.
You already said my name. They already know I'm here.
Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Just keeping it real. So, Becky, what have you come to talk to us about today?
So I read this book called Valiant Women, and it's by Lena Andrews, who is a military analyst for the CIA. I have no idea what that means, but there were a couple of sentences.
I think they analyze the military in relationships to the CIA.
What else? The CIA. I don't mess around with it. I will try hard not to swear as much this episode, Mom. But, you know, we have that sailor blood running through our veins. Anywho, and there are a couple of sentences that Lena Andrews says in the book. I found so-and-so. I'm like, well, you do work at the CIA. I'm sure you can find them however you want. Yay. CIA is scary.
Okay.
Oh, hush.
The silence is deafening.
That is an oxymoron. Did you know?
It's also a famous saying.
True. Congrats.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand him. He's free to a good home.
Or even a not so good home.
Free.
So anyways, let's get back on topic here, Becky. You're talking about Valiant Women.
Right. So it's called Valiant Women, the extraordinary American servicewomen who helped win World War II. And I heard about this book from a podcast by Sharon McMahon. And the podcast is called Here's Where It Gets Interesting. And earlier in 2023, unbeknownst to me, because I found her podcast rather late in the year, she had actually done an entire series, a 12-episode series on her podcast about how women won World War II. And granted, we know they like were helpful, not to diminish anything that men did. But I'm very excited to go back through her catalog and listen to those 12 episodes, because I think it's going to be interesting. As I quickly went through, there was something about Britain and code breaking, and I don't know, I think it'll be just really, really interesting thing to listen to. So when they were talking on the podcast, Lena Andrews was, you know, saying that over 350,000 women served in uniform during World War II. And she talked a lot about how a lot of their jobs were so important, but they were very, very backstage. And how, and I don't know if anybody listening has ever been in a production of any sort or is in the military and whatnot, but it takes so many people to bring to fruition a play or a concert or a battle. And that's what a lot of these women were doing.
So I think this is the correct stat, but I've heard a stat for every soldier on the front line, it takes 20 people in the back to support them. And that's just in country. That's not including all the people back home and all that jazz. So, I mean, that's pretty crazy to think that it's a 20-to-1 ratio for every person that's actually shooting a gun.
I don't know, or maybe I missed it, but maybe the statistics are a little different too for the different branches. Because like, if you're a pilot, you're going to need more people because they have to check the plane and add the guns and ammunition. Someone has to figure out your maps. This is for World War II, not anymore.
I'm just saying, I think the 20-to-1 is just the average, for everybody.
Gotcha. So yeah, so
like the Marines, they're just eating crayons, doing their own thing. So who knows?
Are you referencing that TikTok video guy who has the Space Force finger puppet?
That's just a joke for all, you know, that everyone does with the Marines.
Okay.
Not putting down the Marines at all. Just
please don't come and find us. It was him. It wasn't me. Semper Fi. Please don't hurt me. So some of these things is she spends a lot of pages talking about how they had to do a lot of record keeping because they didn't have computers as we know them. And there's one section, and I'll get into it, about mail and how mail had been backlogged in this one area for over 6 months. And this group came in, totally fixed it. And, you know, it's so important. And my mom and I have done some digging into my dad's dad's history because he was in the military. So was my mom's dad. But we can't get my dad's dad's records because they burned in a fire. And so it's like after reading this book, there was swearing in my head for these women because these women were probably so meticulous about making sure that his name was printed just so and they got all of his correct contact information just for a fire to destroy all of their efforts.
It was probably the same fire. I was listening to a Jocko podcast where he's interviewing a World War II vet. And they have zero record of him ever serving in the military. He can't get in the VA or anything. The only evidence he has is his Bronze Star that he had lost for a long time. And no one believed him until he finally found it. But yeah, all of his records got burned up in this fire in somewhere Midwest or the South.
One of those places. Also on the podcast, it talked about how one of the women that Lena Andrews talks about is going to be made into a film by Tyler Perry. And I went to veteranlife.com just to try and find out some more information. And it is coming. It's called 6888 and it's going to be on Netflix sometime probably in the later half of 2024. So that's exciting. And she just wants us to know how important women were to World War II because when people are like, we should go back to the good old days, there's definitely this mindset of when the good old days were, and it's sort of that 1940s, 1950s period. But here were a whole bunch of women who were that stereotypical, well, some of them were that stereotypical, you know, you finish high school, you get married, you pop out kids, you have pot roast on Sunday nights. But Pearl Harbor happened, and they're like, you know what I should do? Should give up pot roast for a couple of years. It's interesting. And she also talks about that a little bit and how one day, you know, they're in the middle of a war and they're talking to generals and they're probably getting a little heated with generals because let's face it, sometimes men don't listen to women. And then the war ends and suddenly they're back to making those pot roasts on Sunday night or Sunday morning, evening, whatever. That must have been just wild. Wild. I can't even. Yeah, nothing there. He's just smiling at me.
I'm just thinking of a podcast I actually listened to recently by Dan Carlin, his Hardcore History, and he was talking about the end of the Viking Age and how it's kind of hard to pin down because the Vikings, when they, you know, when they're written about, it's basically based off their culture. And as they invaded the rest of Europe, they quickly lost their culture because they were essentially consumed by larger populations. They may have been the leaders, but their whole religion got erased because Christianity was just so big and they were forced to be converted. And what Dan Carlin kept pointing out was women were probably one of the leading forces in the conversion because they're the ones that are kind of pushing it. They're the ones that are having to go to the church when their husbands or their leaders say, okay, everyone has to convert to this now because of this stupid peace treaty. And because the Christians would refuse to negotiate peace until these Viking raiders would claim they converted, and then they'd be in the area, and the priests would demand that everyone go to church, and of course the men would find excuses not to go, but the women still had to go. So they're the ones teaching their kids about Christianity. They're the ones that are talking about it to each other and to their husbands and to other men in the community. And then they're bringing it back to Norway, Sweden, Iceland, wherever. And then on top of it all, the Viking sagas also have a lot of strong women. And it's believed because, you know, essentially when all the men would go off raiding, well, guess who's back home? The women. So they had to pull up their bootstraps and do all the stuff that the men would do for farming and raising the children, hunting, fishing, whatever, because all they had were a bunch of children, old people, and cripples around.
I'm gonna use that word.
Word.
Oh, that's not a good word.
severely maimed Vikings.
There you go. There's connotations that go with crippled. You would never survive a Gen Z.
Nope.
Good thing our kids aren't Gen Z.
No, they're worse.
Eh, they'll do an upswing like we had with, you know, everything is, almost everything's fair to say, like we had in the 90s.
Oh boy, someone's aging himself. Anyway, so the title of the book, I am guessing, she never comes out and says it, but I'm guessing it comes from this quote that is put before the table of contents. It is, "Our debt to the heroic men and valiant women in the service of our country can never be repaid. They have earned our undying gratitude. America will never forget their sacrifices." That was said by Harry Truman, who was president at the time, on April 16th, 1945. The book is split into different sections. There's the problem. I'm pretty sure we all know what the problem was. But then there's the solution. And that was kind of, that's kind of fun. Was it? Anyway, the prologue is all about introducing some of these people, and she makes a footnote about using maiden names throughout the book, and I just went off on an existential tangent through there about names. So how I have my dad's last name and my children have your last name because I refuse to give mine up. Nope, now is not your turn to speak. But they stop. But like my mom harried our grandchildren, right? Because a female fetus has all of the eggs inside of her. They don't just magically appear when she is 12 and hits puberty. Like, they're already there. And so it's just like, what is really my name? Like, is it really my, the patriarchal line? Don't answer. This is an existential rhetorical question. Shush you over there. But just, what is my name? And anyway, I went down that rabbit hole. Nope. Nope. You're, nope. Mm-mm.
I do enjoy you. You get mad at me when I don't talk, then you get mad at me when I try to talk.
I said it was an existential rhetorical question, meaning that you didn't need to respond.
Maybe I wasn't going to respond. Maybe I was just going to add some other little tidbits. But now you'll never know.
Indeed.
Your loss.
Is it though? Is it really? Andrews, the author, I'll go by her last name, found that a lot of the women she was able to find wanted to talk about their service. And in part, it was because they weren't really, it's not that they weren't allowed to, it's just they were sort of expected to come back and make the pot roast and not give the, I don't want to say the glory, but give the honor to the men that served. She also found it very sad, and so did a lot of the women and the family members that she interviewed, that these interviews happened so late in their lives, because a lot of these women are in their 90s and even over 100. So we're going to be losing them soon, unfortunately, and nobody's asked them these questions in this particular manner. You're making a face. Now I would like your opinion.
I am not talking. I am letting you talk. So ignore the guy sitting in the corner.
Or the man behind the curtain.
Oh, I wish I had a curtain.
Me too. She goes on to explain that women were critical to the overall effort. They served in all branches of the military and all theaters of war and served in 2/3 of the available posts. And they were extremely necessary to supply chain and infrastructure things. So those 20 people at the front with that one man on a gun had so many more people behind him. Even back in the States, just, you know, how do you get the gun from New Hampshire? If it's a Winchester, what, I don't know what the exact history of Winchesters, but whatever, we'll pretend, right? To get the Winchester from New Hampshire onto a ship across to probably England or somewhere in North Africa, and then get it to that particular person who's at the Battle of the Bulge. That is a logistical chaotic puzzle. Retribution is not nice, sir. Don't give me that look. You can cut that part out. My notes in front of my face so I can't see him. She goes into an introduction and that talks about how a lot of these women are, they're your regular 1940s women, but many did feel trapped by the minutiae of every day. So you finish high school, maybe you go to college, maybe you get a job, but you get married, you have kids, you make the pot roast. She doesn't actually talk about pot roast all that much. I'm just adding my little flair.
Because you're hungry for pot roast.
Apparently.
Should I make a pot roast for dinner tomorrow?
Maybe.
Have the man do the cooking of the pot roast?
I see nothing wrong with this. She gives a little history about how the United States did not want to join World War II at all. And that's true. We were very much aware of things that were going on, especially in Germany. And we were like, never mind. We're going to build refrigerators. Forget y'all. And, you know, we put a cap on people coming over. There's a wonderful Ken Burns documentary about World War II. Sadly, Netflix stopped their DVD thing before we could finish it all. We missed out on the Iwo Jima parts. But
we had one episode left, Netflix. One episode.
Oh,
I'll get us on PBS eventually. Don't worry.
So part of the reason why they didn't want to join was there was, you know, this very isolationist attitude. And there was also a lot of scars from World War One, because 5 million of U.S. citizens served and 53,000 died and 200,000 were injured. And there's another book, I forget what it's called, something about faces, that I heard about on a podcast that I also don't remember. And it was about plastic surgery and how World War One was really the time when people started thinking about plastic surgery and how it can reconfigure someone's face just because there were so many facial injuries due to it. Well, then we joined. We joined World War II and we made a bunch of stuff. We made over 300,000 airplanes, over 80,000 tanks, and over 2 million trucks, right? And I believe there was a statistic out there that we made over 40 billion rounds of ammunition. But I don't know the specific what bullets and missiles and bombs. It's all just looped together, I think. So we get to the problem. And it is, you know,
a labor shortage.
No, it's not a labor shortage yet. Chapter one is about the Philippine Islands. And it is talking about this Navy nurse who is from California and she's in the Philippines. And she thought it was paradise. And it was, you know, it was a little unpredictable. You know, they're islands. They're out in the middle of nowhere. It's not a global economy like it is today. And she was writing a Dear John letter. She went to bed and the next day Pearl Harbor had happened and the Japanese were coming for them. And again, I can't imagine like one day you're like, I don't think I like my boyfriend, fiance, whatever. And the next day you're like, oh, shnikes, Batman. I have bigger things to worry about.
Poor John doesn't seem so bad anymore if it would avoid this.
Right. Well, and this one talks about how nursing was kind of taboo and how, because, you know, a lot of the ladies were unmarried and they would then see the body parts of
scandalous.
I know, right? They would see the anatomy of their male patients and they would know about diseases like venereal disease, what we know as STIs, rather than teaching the gentlemen to keep it in their pants. They were more afraid of the ladies knowing about it. Anyway. It also kind of touches on sexual assault. A culture that reduces women to a toy or less than should expect rape to be a tactic. And I just had an idea, like 2,000 years of this bull poopy has led to this idea that, you know, not only are women not supposed to know the male anatomy before they get married, but they should also be expected to be raped if they are in the military. That is BS. Patriarchy. Sorry, I'm going to swear here. I have a note that says, fuck men in power. Anywho.
It's not 2,000 years. It's probably more like 2 million.
Yes, definitely. All of the years. A lot of nurses stayed when the Japanese took over the Philippines. And I was questioning, and I think they questioned, was that brave or was that stupid? Because some of those conditions were horrible. And obviously you don't know at the start of a conflict how bad it's going to get. You have guesses, but just, was that bravery or stupidity? Because MacArthur got out. He was like, peace, I'm leaving on a jet plane. He didn't really leave on a jet plane. Just want to state that for the record.
Thank you for letting us know that there were no jet planes with MacArthur on it.
Anytime. The next chapter starts talking about the labor shortage. You got one right.
Oh, me.
In the 1940 census, apparently the United States had 133 million people. Men were around 66 million people, and those aged 25 to 45 were only 25 million. And the white ones of that were about 20 million. Because remember, racism is alive and well in the United States at this point, even in the North. Just remember this, everyone. Industry wanted the same kind of people as the military. They wanted people who would work hard. They wanted people who were knowledgeable and, you know, wouldn't put up a fuss.
So immigrants?
Nope. Not really. Not really what they want. They didn't. They weren't too keen. So women started, you know, filling some of those roles. And then the military, the War Department, studied the idea. But the idea fell apart because traditionalists and conservatives said women belong at home to cook, wash, and mend things. The pacifists didn't want a standing army. So there was this huge conflict between the two different thought processes. And I'm sorry, nobody wants me to stay at home to cook, wash, and mend. I can barely sew a straight line.
I can attest to that. I have seen her sewing abilities.
But you know what? At least I have something. There was a woman, Edith North Rogers, who was a congresswoman from Massachusetts. Woot, woot. Won her late husband's seat. She had seen what the conditions were like for women who were over in World War One, and wanted to protect the women if they would ever go to World War II. As much as the men were. And so in 1941, she introduced some legislation, and the army countered that, okay, we'll let women play along, but they can't actually be in the army, which was BS. So they finagled that. Women got lower pay. They didn't get the same pension or benefits of service. There was a cap on how many women could be in this thing, and they couldn't outrank them. They could not outrank a man. So I guess in the sense that they could only go up to, I think it was a lieutenant colonel, and they couldn't go anything higher than that. So they couldn't become a general. They couldn't become a captain. And anyway, that's just, heaven forbid. And that resolution finally passed in May of 1942. Yay! Women are like, on the way! Woo! So we have this wonderful woman who really liked hats. Her name was Ovetta Culp Hobby, and she became the director of the WAC, the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. It eventually is just, it's at this point, it's the WAAC, and then eventually it'll become just the WAC. Either way, it's WAC, and that's how I'm going to say it, because it makes sense in my head. She was from Texas. And she was able to overcome a lot of obstacles. There were still a lot of things to overcome. The military was really obsessed about clothing and making sure that this person looked pristine. Homeboy fighting over there could look dirty and tattered, but the women had to look pristine, and their behavior had to be above reproach.
The above reproach makes sense because they're introducing something new, and it's always something you gotta be cognizant of, because the naysayers will then take that against you. The uniforms being pristine, that could just have been the military leaders, because, you know, homeboys out on the front didn't really care because they had more important things to worry about. But there's a lot of stories where those guys would come off the front for their R&R, and they're not even, they're literally seconds through the gate, and they got someone berating them for looking so haggard and dirty and unshaven. So, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, it is kind of what it is.
Sure. The army went overboard. They even had their own special underwear for the army.
Well, the army guys do have their own special underwear.
The Waves didn't do that. The Waves were the women's auxiliary volunteer, or women accepted for voluntary emergency service, and that was the Navy. So the WAC is for the Army. The Waves are for the Navy. Oh, that makes sense, right?
And if you think about the Navy is always kind of on the front edge of everything, so.
It's very true. They look so nice in their whites. You know, World War II.
Now who's talking about uniforms and looking too nice?
Have you ever seen those whites? I mean, that is impressive. They are white. They look like a dentist commercial. they are so white. I want to know the secret. Is there something magic in that fabric?
Yeah, right on.
Whatever comes from 2,000 leagues under the sea. So the waves were a little different. There had been women in the Navy in World War One. There were about 10,000 of them. But in 1941, before Pearl Harbor, the Navy was like, nah, we don't need them. It's going to be fine. But this woman, Dr. Margaret Chung, who I don't know why this was really necessary information, but Andrews, the author, put in that Dr. Chung was most likely queer or lesbian and had been investigated by the federal government because of this. Maybe it was because of her relationship with a lot of Navy men, not in a sexual way, just she kind of adopted them, became a mom figure. As many as like 500 came to call her like mom, which is a lot. But she used her connections to help create waves, and she wasn't allowed to join because of her age and most likely because of her ancestry as a Chinese American and her sexuality, which, boo. So the waves didn't regulate things in the same way that the army did. The ladies could wear their regular old garments, their gutchies, as my grandmother would call them. And they gave women status in the Navy. Now, this is different from the WAC, because the WAC, was like, hey, you are part of us, but you're not really part of us. Sort of like a Mean Girls thing where maybe you can sit with them on Wednesdays. But the Navy was like, you're part of us. You're going to get the same benefits, whatever. But you can't go higher than a lieutenant commander. Because again, heaven forbid, a lady is higher. And they picked a woman named Mildred McAfee, who had a lot of credentials. She went to Vassar and University of Chicago. She was the president of Wellesley. And of course, you know, there were difficulties that she had because, you know, sexism, whatnot. The Marine Corps and the Coast Guard also made theirs. The Coast Guard was named SPARS, and it's Semper Paratus, always ready. That's what their name is. And then, I love me the Marines. So the Lieutenant General Thomas Holcomb did not want women anywhere near this. And he was also racist. He would rather have had 5,000 white men than 250,000 black men. And he was just, but he was got with the program, and he's like, all right, there's political pressure. They're also going to provide manpower. So they found this woman, Ruth Cheney Streeter, who was a housewife and a pilot. And he was like, we're not doing any of this fancy name crap like the WAC and the Waves and the SPARS. They are just the MCWR, the Marine Corps Women's Reserve. I love it. Just straight to the point. Like, you know exactly what this is. I can't even make like Morocco. I don't even know how to make the sound. Don't laugh at me. He's doing his toenails while listening, people. That's just...
that is fake news.
You'll probably hear the clipping in the background. By the time we get to Chapter 8, we're starting to think about an Air Force. Now, the Air Force didn't exist as we know it today in 2024. It was under the umbrella of the Army. So she goes into a little bit about the history of women in aviation, and there was a group called the 99s created in 1929 that had Jacqueline Cochran, who is also known as Bessie Lee Pittman, Nancy Harkness Love, and there were mixed feelings about women and flying. So the Women's Air Force split into two different groups. One group was more of a ferrying service. So they would either take planes or supplies to different places in the United States and then go back to wherever their home base was. And then there was the other group that was trying to test planes and whatnot. And so there was a lot of drama in that, which unfortunately they weren't thinking about the future. And so we'll get to that in a later chapter, but if they had worked together, things I think would have turned out very differently for them. One thing I did not like about this book was that every chapter rotated through the different groups. So some of the time I didn't remember who I was reading about, which was frustrating. But we're back to the wax and training them and how you could become a whack. So first and foremost, you had to weigh more than 100 pounds. And if you were a girl and weighing less than 100 pounds, they told you to eat bananas and come back later.
Well, I guess that is one way to do it.
Right. Also, if you did not meet the height requirement, they were like, go to the bathroom and tease your hair.
Again, another good way to do it. I would think some platform heels or something might have helped also.
You could also get letters from an influential person. Maybe have some of these people over for Sunday dinner. This sounds like really, really high bar was put out here. Somebody, I didn't write down who, but somebody said, you know, men lie to stay out and women lie to get in, which, yeah. They hoped, the wax hoped for 11,000 in the first year and they got 60,000. Like, women were ready. We were ready to do this. And bringing it home, Fort Des Moines was one of the first WAC bases. It used to be a cavalry base, and so they had to retrofit the stables for housing. And prove to the idiots in Congress that women thrived in structure, and they were better at marching than the men. I can't imagine why. I can't imagine. Guesses? I don't have an answer. I'm just asking you if you have a guess.
Well, why they had to be better, or why they were better?
Yeah, why they were better.
I don't know. I mean, when you think about synchronized swimming, that's just basically a woman's event. There's no men, so they must synchronize better than men.
But why? You're just like my students. Like, why? Explain.
I don't want to get in that much trouble on this podcast. I'm already in enough trouble as it is tonight.
He's a scaredy cat. Black women did join WAC. It was segregated because the army is dumb. And I think Andrews, the author, did a really good job talking about the hypocrisy of people of color serving in the armed forces, particularly black men and women, because, you know, black men fought for the rights of others overseas, but were denied them at home. And it is really interesting to think about how people thought about it back then and how they justified their actions and their beliefs, which were and still are bullshit. Sorry for swearing, but racism is not okay in any way, shape, or form. Charity Adams is the one that I mentioned at the beginning, who Tyler Perry is making a movie about. I believe the movie will be called the 6888, because they were part of the 6888 Central Postal Battalion, and they were sent to Europe. She got the rank of lieutenant colonel, and we'll get into her a little bit and her experiences. Racism is dumb, people. Stop it. Then it talks a little bit about recruiting the Waves, and they took over college campuses like Hunter College and Smith College and Mount Holyoke. They didn't really want to start with basic training, but they corrected that mistake 6 months later because they were like, oh yeah, this isn't working. We need to fix it. So there is something about basic training, just making a cohesive group and creating the vocabulary and whatnot. The SPARs went to the Biltmore Hotel in Palm Beach, but they took out all the fun stuff, all the luxuries, fancy wallpaper. And then the Marine Corps Women Reserve went to Camp Lejeune. Welcome to hell, basically, right? They got a better sense of weapons, though, and the men performed better. There were just, you know, because they're thrown into this camp that's usually just for men or has been just for men, there was a lot of harassment, a lot of name calling. They called them BAMs, which meant broad-assed Marines. Like, really? Have you not seen a man's butt? Like, it's all broad. Anyway, the Air Force finally got a name called the WASPs. And Remember, they were in those two different things. There's the one that's ferrying planes or trying to test the planes. They were created in 1943. And again, they did not join in with the military. So the WAC eventually kind of went in. The waves kind of were totally in. SPARs and the Marines were in. So that's going to help them later on. The WASPs, not so much. But then come the rumors. Then come the rumors because the military was like, oh yeah, we have people who have never been away from home before, don't know their body parts, and they can go on dates. They can go on dates with the service people. They can go on dates with any gentleman they find outside the gates. And so people were in an uproar because a lot of women were like, hey, no one's watching me. I can figure this shit out by myself. Sorry, it's more. But they were told about birth control and condoms. The Army actually published something, or the military in general published something called Sex and Hygiene. And it was a pamphlet. And it told women, like, here are your parts inside and outside. Here's how you can keep them clean. And I can't imagine making it to 18 and nobody has saying, like, wash yourself, right?
I have no comment.
Is it the same for men? Do you think men went into the military at this point and had to be taught how to clean themselves? Like, what the hell?
These are people that have never left their communities before. And you got a lot of the lower educated people, especially among the boys, probably joining the military because, I mean, this is probably their best prospect for employment and getting out of their hometowns and all that stuff. So yeah, a lot of these people just don't know. It's not like nowadays where we're hyper-focused on that sort of stuff.
Being clean?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people didn't shower regularly or wash regularly.
Nah. But this chapter talks about how the response of people, so the fact that women were going and experiencing some of these things for the first time, there were people who wrote letters to their female relative, wife, sister, daughter, whatever, and were like, come home or bad things will happen. You will get divorced. You will be disowned. Like, what the hell? And then men in uniform didn't deny any of these rumors. Some of the worst ones, like all of them are, you know, all the women are being promiscuous and whatnot. And they had very few positive things to say. And that's just like, how messed up, how threatened are you by somebody that you can't say a nice thing about them? They're not coming for your gun, friend. They're not.
I think that's just human nature in general. I mean, you look at workplaces nowadays, how cutthroat people can be, and you get success, some sort of success, and everyone's just trying to tear you back down. I think, you know, this group of women are being successful. I mean, these are obviously women that are driven, so they're already going to, you know, the majority of them are going to be the cream of the crop that's going to be coming in. And yeah, people are threatened. People don't like the change. People don't like changes in general, and they see all these women, I said, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and being totally boss ladies. And they're like, no, you can't be a boss lady because I'm not a boss lady. So therefore you can't be a boss lady.
Sometimes men are stupid. And yes, you are right that they didn't want whore women. They wanted white, middle-class, fairly well-educated women. And it talks about that numerous times in the book. Like even the recruitment posters were not of people of color. It was a white lady, generally blonde. Racism is dumb. Herger. Anywho, Eisenhower was one of the big reasons why women were part of the North African campaign, because he saw just how phenomenal they were at their jobs, clerical work and strategizing how to get crap from point A to point B. And North Africa sounds like it was awful. Because it's a desert and they're talking about mud and it hurt my brain. Like, why is there mud in a desert? but our stuff wasn't prepared for it. And so women were part of the reason why we figured out how to go across those sand dunes and mud pits and whatnot. And we were only there because the British didn't want to just go through France. They were like, no, let's go the long way.
It probably helped us in the long run because I don't know if you remember from the Ken Burns documentary, I forget which one, where basically we went out there and we had no clue what we were doing. It was kind of a good test run. Right? So the British weren't totally wrong on that.
Honestly, not much has changed for the Americans. We don't know what we're doing anyway. That's why the world makes fun of us.
Yeah, here we are.
Still being made fun of.
Still leading the world and our shenanigans.
Being treated like children. So it also talks about nurses in this chapter, around chapter 15, and how there were less than 1,000 at Pearl Harbor in the Army, and there were 12,000 in the Army 6 months later. And by June of 1943, there were 36,000. At Pearl Harbor, there were 800 Navy nurses, and by 1945, there were 11,000 nurses. So nurses made up a lot of our female friends' jobs. Here's where some of the BS comes into play. A screw just fell out of the chair. It'll be fine, right? So the BS that comes into play is that these women were not able to get a full commission. And I asked my friend who was in the military, what does that mean? And generally, a commission means that you become an officer of some sort. Generally, nowadays, it's through some sort of higher education. The show, the one with the shoulders guy. SEAL Team. Yes, the shoulders man. That was not the head one. I forget what the shoulders man was.
He was the Wren officer.
Yes, that one. Shoulders. He had massive shoulders.
And that's a completely different system than what you're talking about here, so we won't get into that.
Well, no, I was going to say, so in that show, there's an enlisted officer who goes through school. That's what I was trying to say before you made an assumption.
I didn't. I just wanted to make sure you were clear on his position. That's all.
I don't know what his position was. I was just always freaked out by his shoulders. It looked like there were tennis balls. Anyway, moving on. These women weren't able to get a full commission. They had the titles and duties of full rank, but they didn't get the benefits, so they didn't get pay. And a second lieutenant in the Army got $88.60 per month, and dudes got double. Yes. It eventually was reversed, but for many of them, they still were not able to get burial rights or retirement. And I'm sorry, burial rights is a big thing. If anyone has ever been to a military service for a fallen veteran, like, that's a big deal. And to have served and to have died in defense of your country or trying to help serve your country or even afterwards and not being able to get those rights, that's BS. Can you tell? I get a little heated. Back here in the States, don't smirk at me. In the States, there was a lot of anger at women for working, because all of these men went to go fight and to go serve in the military, and who's left? As you pointed out earlier, it's women and children and people who are disabled for whatever reason. Now, granted, there were still a lot of men here, because remember that their target audience in the military were those 25 to 45. So there's still lots of people. And, you know, the young boys got permission from their parents and signed up at 16, 17.
Or they just flat out lied. A lot of them did that.
That too. The unions were kind of hoops because they wanted to make sure that jobs went to men first, even if a woman was qualified, which drove some to the military, some women to the military. And yeah, just, this chapter was kind of all over the place because then it jumped back over to serving overseas and the dangers that women face there. Like, there was a plane that went down and it took the women who they were in Italy and they were going somewhere else in Italy. No, across the way. Anyway, geography sometimes is hard for me. But somehow they landed in Albania and it took them 3 months to go back to their original spot because they landed in enemy territory, and they had no idea, is this a good place? Is this a bad place? And the planes were often, well, the planes were, what's the word? Words are hard.
Dilapidated?
No. Fair game. The planes were fair game a lot of the time because they'd pull double duty. So a plane could be carrying ammunition and supplies and whatnot. And then on a return trip from the front, it could take wounded soldiers and nurses and whatnot. And because of that, they would not be able to have the Red Cross painted on them.
That's fairly common.
But it's BS.
It's common nowadays, even with our people. So,
yes. And those women were amazing that they came all the way back. FDR, I know everyone is like, FDR is a great president. To an extent, he was still a little punk.
I think of the times. He was ahead of his times in many ways.
Not in this way. There was a ship that was holding a bunch of wax, and it was torpedoed. Those women got into a life raft and helped save a bunch of men. And when they landed in North Africa, the president was like, yay, they survived with just the things they escaped in. And everyone chuckled because they were basically naked. And everyone thought it was funny, his innuendo. It's like, seriously, these ladies, these women are going to try and help our country and you reduce them to what they are wearing. It's around 1943 that the wax are finally integrated into the army, full stop, and they got things. Women, the waves, trained many of the men, especially the last 2 years of the war, especially Navy aviators. They most likely had training from a wave at some point. They did things like aviation gunnery, air transport, air combat formation, and celestial navigation. I am Moana. Anyway, don't look at me like that. It was a perfect time. You're going to leave that in there, aren't you?
They recorded, yes, I will.
Yeah. He's sitting over there just staring at me like I am. Anyhow, he's free. Anyone, please.
Save me.
Please take him. Women did a lot with the airplanes because they were detail oriented and they had smaller hands. And I don't know much about an airplane, but I have tried to fix my sewing machine. And those things are so tiny small. Men had issues, of course. There was one particular place where one of the top men was like, women can't be here. We don't have the bathrooms for them. Seriously. So finally, they figured out a way to make sure it's okay. And it was, you put a peg outside the bathroom and whoever's hat was hanging was showed like if it was a dude or a girl.
They could have just dug their own latrines.
Whatevs. And some men were so obnoxious that women were coming for their jobs that they would try and sabotage women before they even got started. So there's this story about these two men who were being replaced by women because the men were being shipped over and the women had to move tires to this top shelf. And the men went to lunch and were like, good luck. And when the men came back, I really hope that their eyes bugged out of their head because the women had done it. And they're like, how'd you do it? And the women go, we made a pulley system. Like, why do men think women are stupid? Don't answer that.
I was just going to say, probably a lot of these men were afraid that the women were going to take their jobs. And that meant they got sent to the front lines and got shot at. And they were like, I like this cushy job back in the States, hiding from the real action. And I was not saying that the women didn't want to get into the real action, because I'm sure most of them did. But there's probably a lot of men that were just terrified to move up and be sent overseas. And that's probably part of the hostilities, like in this situation.
It's not the women's fault.
No, but
and they should have known better.
Human nature. And these people don't really think of, you know, like modern psychology, even modern psychology to their standards, and don't realize that they're just projecting their assholery and being chicken shit to, you know, hurting these women. They're just thinking about themselves.
And black women had it really bad. Well, there's a couple of stories about how on at a dining car from Georgia to Texas, a woman in uniform had to eat separately in the dining car. And there was this adjutant general. I said that word wrong. Sorry.
Junk.
There you go. He was sitting in like her spot because there were no other places because it was also the VIP area. And so she wasn't able to eat, but luckily a major was like, hey, you can eat with me. And then everybody on the train was waiting for the general to get off first. And the general was like, no, she goes first and let her go. So that was cool. And Black women who were in uniform in the South were especially reviled. And she goes in, the author, Lena Andrews, goes into a little bit about how 70 Black men were lynched after World War I. They were veterans. And that so disturbed people that they were like, nope, nope, mm-mm, hard pass, can't do it. Racist assholes. Sorry. A little fired up still about it. They recruited a lot from conservative areas. And so because of this, most of the people were well-behaved. Some were adventurous, but not many. And there's a chapter where it talked about how men would sometimes try and use the superior rank to get dates. And when they were declined, they became scary assholes, which hasn't changed. You know, there, what was it, 10 years ago, there was a, in Santa Barbara, somebody was turned down for a date. And so he was like, okay, and shot a bunch of people. And then was it last year or was it the year before? A boy asked a girl to a middle school Valentine's Day dance and he was told no, very nicely. But everyone was like, oh, that's so heartless. And so then the next day, people like gave him Valentine's and said they would go with him rather than being like, yeah, she said no.
I think, you know, even in the military, there are stories of that sort of shit still happening. And yeah, it is just horrendously wrong. And yeah.
Navy had a slogan that said, join the Navy to ride the waves. And that was a double entendre, in case you didn't catch it.
I missed it. Can you explain it to me?
Seriously? Seriously?
Seriously.
Like the waves of the ocean, but also the waves. You said seriously, so I'm going to do it. Shush, you. The waves of the ocean.
I would have thought my sarcastic way of saying it would have been obvious enough, but go ahead, say it.
Well, the Navy's in the ocean, so it's the waves of the ocean, but it's also the waves, the women who were helping them. Ooh, which reminded me, I have a little note here. My senior year of high school, we had this horrible slogan that was, save a horse, ride a sophomore, everyone else has. So I guess not much has changed. We made t-shirts. I didn't actually get one, but
did you want one? So you're part of the problem is what you're saying?
I was. I was indeed.
Still are.
Excuse me?
What?
How?
I don't know.
Because when my middle schoolers say something along those lines, I ask them, why is it funny? Someone makes sex noises in the hallway, and I'm like, why is it funny? And only one person, and I sent a wonderful email to their parent after this, only one person had the courage to actually say, well, it's funny because they're kind of making sounds that you might see on like sex videos. And so I sent the parents an email saying like, hey, this happened in the hallway. Your student was very brave. I commend the student. They're not in trouble, but just to let you know, like maybe watch their internet usage. Anyway, rape was prevalent, especially, you know, we put men and women together. And rather than being like, men, don't do this, they just tried to control the women. A lot of times, if sexual harassment or rape was reported, it was dismissed because the woman was divorced or a condom had been used. And just a lot of barriers were put up for women, but not for men. Because heaven forbid. Moving on. Chapter 20 is, we're in the solution part. I don't know how this particular one is a solution, but chapter 20 is called, Now is the Time to Investigate the Opportunities Offered, Court Martials. And it really focused in on lesbian relationships and how if you were found out and they could prove it, you would be court-martialed and you would be dishonorably discharged, which is BS.
They did this for the men too, though. This was, I forget what it was called, but they had, there was a whole like gay ring that had the code name, and the military was huge on trying to dig this out. And so it's not just the women, it's just the whole LGBT community at that time was just horribly treated.
And it's BS. And one of the leaders of one of the women's groups, there's suspicion that she was friendly and more with another high-ranking woman within the group because they lived together later on. And it's just, what you do with your private parts is not anybody's business when you're shooting a gun at a Nazi. Or when you are trying to figure out how to get the gun to the guy who's going to shoot the Nazi. So frustrating. Chapter 21 brings us back to the wasps. And this is probably one of my favorite chapters because it's hilarious. So the chapter is introduced with this female pilot who drops down. And she's the first one from her squadron to get to the base. And the runway is really bumpy. And a male pilot, bets that the group of female pilots coming behind her are going to bounce on the dirt runway. And the control officer is like, okay, I'll take that bet. And so it was going to be $1 for every female who bounced. And the control officer...
That's a lot of money back then.
I know. Oh, it's gonna get doubled. Because the control officer was like, all right, it's going to be $1 for every guy who bounces. Who won? Who made money that day?
I say the control officer.
Ding, 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 ding. Because not one woman bounced, but almost all of the men.
How many was in this? You know,
They
didn't say so.
Squadron. I don't know exactly how many is a squadron. I think it was a squadron.
I think.
Is that 30?
No.
15?
It's just not that many. I mean, it's a lot of. Yeah, it might have been different in World War II, but I think nowadays it's something like 6 planes.
Okay.
So.
Anyway, either way, like that's still a lot of money back then. And it talks about the casualties of the wasps. The wasps only lost 9% of their overall group compared to 11% of male aviators. And it's really a testament to them because the women were often put into untested or not well-maintained planes. But my favorite is this, the B-26 Marauder, a.k.a. the Widowmaker. It was called the Widowmaker because countless pilots and their crew had died, which is horrible. It is horrible that that happened. So they put women in here.
Your Minnesotan came out there, just so you know.
It happens, man. So they put women in there to just try to figure out, like, what is going on? And they had a bunch of men watch this. But they didn't tell the men that women were in the cockpit. So the B-52 Marauder is coming down. It lands safely and everyone walks out and they're women. And all of the men standing there are like, And they were asked, how did you land the plane so nicely? And the women went, we read the instruction manual. Like, that's just classic. I'm sorry. That's just classic.
Think they actually read it, or they're just saying that being sarcastic assholes to kind of get back at the men? You think so?
Yes, because part of their job as aviators was to help make sure that the planes were safe, and so they felt really duty bound, honor bound to make sure that those planes were okay for the men to use. And they had, if you know, we've never seen personally, like on the ground, a plane crash. I mean, we saw 9/11 and we saw footage of that, but we have never seen face to face. These women had. So you think of all that stuff they'd seen, they were like, crap, like what is going on? So yeah, they read the manual and we're like, oh, okay, we figured it out.
I'm just saying I'm sure they were so used to getting crap and giving crap back, they could have just been like, yeah, we did it this way and just kind of like, you know, kind of putting in the men's faces and not actually having read it, but then the men had to think, oh shit, maybe we should read those things if we knew how to read.
The wasps eventually came to an end in 1944. They never joined into the military officially. So the women who served there never got pay. They never got benefits, burial rights, things of that nature until much later in the United States integration of women, which is just so frustrating because like we think, oh yeah, Oppenheimer, they made the atomic bomb and then they put it on that plane and forget his name. I think it was Peter. Was that the first name of the pilot that took the little boy?
I don't remember.
But a woman was the first one to actually test that plane to make sure that it could hold the payload. Was that in Oppenheimer? I honestly don't know. I didn't see it. But I would hope that that would be in there because that's an important thing. Like you're making a big old bomb. You got to make sure your plane can fit that bomb. Anyway.
You really got your hackles up tonight.
Oh, yes, I do. Chapter 23, I just have fucking racists as my first note.
We're sorry, Mary.
Sorry, Mom.
I know you tried really hard to raise your daughter right, but I think she spent too much time around sailors and former sailors.
I never actually did, so boo. Yeah. So there's this woman, Charity Adams, who was on a train and minding her business, living her life, had her insignia, because remember, she had become a lieutenant colonel in the WAC, minding her business, going to her next destination, and a white woman is sitting there and just appalled that A, that there's a black woman near her, and B, that she is in military uniform with officer insignia. And so she stops an MP and is like, you need to check that lady. It's like the 1940 version of the YouTube videos of the people who are like, we need to call the police on the black man walking his dog in the park.
Here's a question. Were the black women, when they were getting these ranks among their fellow women officers, were they considered equal, or were, you know, the white female WAFs and WACs and WAVs also just racist assholes?
Yes, all of it. I mean, there were people who obviously weren't, but yeah, Charity Adams was thought of as less than, even though she had a high rank.
Even among her peers.
The black women, no. Among white women, some of the white women, yes.
Some of the white women in her military groups.
She was not, remember, they were segregated. So she didn't really interact much with groups of white women.
Okay, thank you.
And the MP, bless his heart, was like, no, ma'am, I am not going to check her because if I am wrong and she actually is a high-ranking person, I'm going to lose my job. And that just incensed the white woman. Like, what? She's just minding her own business. Anyway, so Charity Adams was part of the 6888, their postal group, and they were sent to England to fix a horrible mess of mail. They were the group, they were sent to this rat-infested warehouse with moldering mail that had been sitting around for 6 months. They got the backlog of 6 months' mail, plus like the everyday present mail, cleared in 3 months. Like that's something, because there are so many John Smiths. And sometimes not everything, you know, is typed out. It's handwritten.
Imagine there's a few Jane Smiths in there, too, at this point.
I don't know, because most of this mail was supposed to be for people at the front. So generally, women were not at the front. But there could have been a few Janes. Like, their job was to get the mail through. And the mail, I mean, I get excited when I get mail, even if it's a bill. And then I realize it's a bill and I'm sad. But it's like, oh, I just got a letter. Blue's Clues generation here. Woohoo. He's like, no, I don't know what that means. He missed out, man. He missed out.
I grew up without cable.
I don't know how he did it.
I learned how to read really fast so that I could actually have some sort of entertainment other than throwing rocks.
And yet I have more books read this year.
For the moment.
Moving on. So at the end, you know, we won. Woo-hoo, go us. And
hey.
The contract for a lot of these women had said for the duration of the war plus 6 months, which makes sense. You know, trying to get everyone home was chaotic and crazy. They did try to keep them for longer. Eisenhower really wanted it, but it took 2 years from Congress debating whether or not this should be a thing. However,
and we think today is bad.
Right. However, in June of 1948, the Women's Armed Services Integration Act was signed into law by President Truman. So it did happen. It did finally happen. And it said women can be in the regular military or in the reserves. They couldn't serve in combat roles. They couldn't have full command or authority over men. They couldn't go above a captain or a colonel.
Is that lieutenant colonel or full bird?
Full bird.
Okay. So a little bit better than they were in World War II then.
No, yes. Still. If they were under the age of 21, they needed parental permission. Men did not need parental permission if they were under the age of 21. And they could be dismissed for any reason, like pregnancy. They could not have any dependents. So they could not claim their husbands or children. And, this is when one of my faves comes into the story. In 1973, Ruth Bader Ginsburg starts arguing Fonterio versus Richardson. Fonterio was a lieutenant in the Air Force, and she wanted to make sure that her husband had the same benefits that women of military spouses got. And that's what I really love about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's history, is like she started trying to get rights in these weird sort of places where, like, oh yeah, men can be spouses of military service people. They should get the same things.
Men should get what women get, right? Funny how that works out, right? Sometimes, huh?
Isn't it just? And the author talks a little bit about how, you know, we think of the military as this sort of crusty institution and how it's backward, but it wrote that sex and hygiene manual way before the feminine mystique came out, way before Gloria Steinem was like, let's make the Mrs. magazine, right? So that's just interesting. And it ends, spoiler, I don't know if it's a spoiler. Anyway, it ends with the...
We won, remember?
We did. It ends with the talking about the Coast Guard naming a cutter in 2012 after the woman who ran the SPARS program during World War II. And it was the first time that a first lady had ever sponsored a ship like it. So First Lady Michelle Obama was the first lady to sponsor this type of cutter. So that was just interesting. And I really liked it. And yes, it gets me fired up because we forget so much of what women have done. Because yes, history is written by the victors, but women have been part of daily life for 2 million years.
As Dan Collaren said in his podcast, women are literally half the population.
Legit.
Sometimes more after a war like this where all the men, you know, managed to kill themselves.
And, you know, I work with middle schoolers, and so they talk sometime about what they're doing at home, and they're playing games. And some of my female middle schoolers enjoy gaming, and they are terrified of ever letting the people that they play these games with know that they are female, which is BS. It's BS. Like, I can't even. 2024, you know, all the great wars, all the horrible wars, there were always women around. They were the ones who afterwards would help clean up. And that's nasty. That is nasty. Like, dead bodies stink. They're fascinating, but they stink, right? And so, you know, we hear the stories about the camp followers and the sex workers who follow the armies and whatnot. And that's it. We are never really told of the women who helped support these individuals.
We even miss the stories of the women who are running the castles when the men go out to go kill each other. Like, they always say, oh yeah, the one guy did it, but you know, who's he taking orders from? The lady of the house. Oftentimes, you know, the men couldn't be bothered running the house and left it to their wives or oldest daughters or whatever.
I don't know. I just thought it was a really good book. I'm going to go back and listen to those 12 episodes that Sharon McMahon has about World War II and how women won the war, because I'm intrigued.
Maybe helped helped win the war. I mean, you know, this is, you know, not to downplay their...
As you're about to do it.
I'm just saying that, you know, without them, we probably wouldn't have won the war. But without the men, we wouldn't have won the war either. So everyone helped.
Everyone helped, yes.
Everyone has their part, and we should not disclude people just because they're different from us. And, yeah.
Racism is dumb.
It is dumb.
Sexism is dumb.
It is dumb.
Down with the patriarchy.
Dumb. There is no patriarchy.
Excuse me, sir? We're going to have to rumble after
now,
this.
Now you should see her face. We're going to have to rumble should really, after we should this. Probably start doing video on this, because her face was just pure hatred.
You just said the patriarchy doesn't exist. Excuse me, sir. Oh, do you have other questions or comments about this amazing book?
You said there was a difference between the two Air Forces women there. Did you? You said one was basically volunteer and didn't get any benefits. The other one was.
No, they were both volunteer. One was more focused on ferrying, and what that meant was they were taking planes from Georgia and flying the plane to Washington, thereby freeing up another pilot who could go overseas.
Yeah, but you said one got screwed over. Which one?
They both got screwed over.
You said one got worse than the other, I thought.
So the ferrying, the way it kind of worked out, so the two women in charge of those two groups didn't see eye to eye, and the one who wanted to be more engaging the women with the military in general won out, and the one who was all for the ferrying kind of slipped under. So there was this headbutting, and I guess you would sort of, it's not a cat fight, but there was a lot of disagreements about how that program should be run. And so, and I forget her name. I believe her last name is Love. No, that's not right. I forget. Boop, 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 boop. Anyway, she had the ear of the general who was in charge. And so she was able to make it more of what she wanted overall. And she didn't, when the two groups finally became one, and had the opportunity to join up with the military, she was like, nah, we don't need it. And then it was disbanded and nobody got what they rightfully deserved until much later.
I think that's all the questions I have.
And then all the ladies went home and made pot roast. Brr.
Pot roasts can be very good. Thank you very much.
That's not the point. Ugh.
I'm partial to steak, though. Pot roasts tend to be a little watered down.
I think I would have had a problem. And some of these women, especially the ones in leadership positions, when they came back, they continued their leadership. They became presidents of colleges or heads of departments. One woman, forget which group she ran, but she was later asked to be the secretary of housing, which is kind of cool. And
so they weren't all just going back to just making pot roasts. Yeah. The more savvy ones were able to continue some sort of careers in the civilian world. And
yeah, and I think some of them
can continue the, I guess you could call it the feminist movement, or just the human movement of equalizing everybody. And
some stayed on because they were nurses, and that was already sort of spoke of the umbrella. But I think that would have been really hard, just like it was for men to come back, to have, you know, maybe the women weren't on the front lines, but they saw some shit. They experienced some shit, and to come back. And so not only did we do a disservice to our men by not taking care of their mental health, but then the women who came back were just sort of like, go home, have your babies, make the food, let men have their glory. Don't really talk about what you did.
I mean, you think about it, the women are being forced back out of the job market, which is definitely tough for them. And the men are saying, hey, all these women are doing my job. And their whole worldviews were, you know, they're coming home thinking, like, okay, everything's going to be the same as when I left. And then they come back and that's shattered after having their whole psyche shattered at the war. You know, it was just a bad deal for everyone. And basically nobody knew how to handle that.
I know. I probably would not have done very well.
No, you would not have. You would have been like, I like this welding thing. I'm going to keep welding. I don't care if I am welding my own casket here. We're going to keep going.
I want adventure in the great wide somewhere.
So yeah, you have any other comments you would like to make?
I think people should read this book, and I hope that...
So what's the book called again?
It is called Valiant Women, The Extraordinary American Servicewomen Who Helped Win World War II, and is by Lena Andrews, who is a military analyst for the Central Intelligence Agency. Please don't come and hurt me.
Since you've been gushing over her, I'm sure she will give you a pass on this one.
He has a PhD from MIT in political science. Like, that is high bar.
It is. So, yeah, we're coming up on our longest episode yet, so we'll start wrapping it up, I guess. I was hoping you were going to hit 2 hours, but you're falling a little bit short of that.
Well, I can probably add more.
I think we're good. You doing a little song and dance isn't going to quite translate to the podcast, so.
Conquering hero.
So, yeah, this has been Bookworms. You can follow us on Instagram at Kindle Bookworms. We have an email at KindleBookworms@gmail.com. We're working on getting a YouTube channel out there, so you know, check that out. If we, you know, hopefully we'll have that up sooner or later. And yeah, Alex has some books. He's not here with us today, but I'm sure he'll appreciate any sales he can make. Paul Pimpleton versus Ragnarok is his latest title. My favorite title of his is his first book, The Destroyer. You can find that on Amazon. We'll have the link below. Is there any other things? Oh, we're on Podbean, so check that out. Like and subscribe and comment on Spotify. I usually put up some sort of question or poll, so definitely check that out if you're searching us through there. Am I missing anything, Becky, that you can think of?
You said Facebook and Instagram, your email.
Facebook, yeah, we have a Facebook page. Follow us on that. Show us some love. We want some love. Tell us about to your friends. You know, that's the best way to get our name out there. And we'd love to have our audience growing and learning about all these great books we read.
Desperate people. He talks to me now.
I know. It's scary.
Instead of answering mail or trying to set up a podcast, he talks to me.
Also, if you want Becky to become a permanent host, no, please comment and force her to read the books Alex and I read.
I refuse. Stuff did me in.
That is a bonus episode. That is not a main feed book. So just like this is a bonus book, I think you'd do great. You know, people loved you in Stiff. They loved you in Butcher and the Wren. So I think you should read more books with us.
My mommy says I can't swear as much, so I can't do it.
I give you permission. As your husband, I give you permission.
Ew, he just said a naughty word. I need to go take a bath and bleach. Yes, I know that's going to hurt. I won't actually do it. I promise.
Anyways, that is all. I hope you guys enjoyed. This has been Bookworms. Out.
Bye, worms.